Bienvenidos a Data Latam, donde exploramos la industria de datos en Latinoamérica.
Muy buenas, Franz, ¿cómo estás?
Muy bien, Diego, muchas gracias. Muy buenas. ¿Tú cómo estás?
Bien, bien, bien. Bueno, ahora vamos a hablar un poquito en español, porque después vamos a un podcast en inglés, pero antes, en español, ¿qué tal esos viajes en los que estuviste hablando con bastante gente en varios países?
Bueno, estuvimos ambos de gira, pero a mí me tocó la gira por Bolivia, que estuvo buenísimo. Siempre me encanta estar en Bolivia. Siempre me asombra el nivel donde gente profesionales están. Entonces, muy, muy, muy divertido. En Santa Cruz y La Paz hicimos presentaciones y reuniones. Y pronto vamos a Medellín. ¿Sí? Si estás escuchando, quieres participar de esos eventos, mira siempre en xpantia.com/eventos. Ahí mantenemos un registro de todos los eventos que vamos a hacer y de los que hicimos, creo. Creo que hay algo de pasado también.
Sí, tal vez este es en frío, Franz. Me vas a matar, Franz. Pero hay algún highlight. Yo también anduve por México, anduvimos hablando de estos temas de AI que tanto nos gustan, pero algo que te llame la atención así de las tantas presentaciones que ha tocado y las interacciones con ejecutivos que están viendo temas de AI en la región. ¿Qué así, uno o dos highlights?
Mira, la primera es que porque hacemos una demo, hacemos algo interactivo para hablar de costos. Y cada vez que explico cómo funcionan costos con el costo input tokens, output tokens, caching, que los modelos más costosos pueden ser 100 veces más costosos que los anteriores, abre ojos. Si el cómo manejar costos para muchos es algo nuevo que no han pensado, y es de hecho algo que estamos ayudando en muchos proyectos porque es súper importante hacia el futuro. Sí. La otra es creo que generamos claridad al hablar de que hay tres tipos de IA, sí, de reglas, de predicción y generativo. Y es que la combinación, cómo lo logras combinar en una solución que lleva valor al negocio. Y eso también siempre trae muy buenas discusiones porque gente va como, pero entonces lo que ya había pensado también entra en todo esto. Sí, también entra en todo esto.
Sí, creo que en general el mercado siempre estuvo algo abrumado con el tema de analítica, pero últimamente con la presión de los grandes vendors de todo esto, aún más abrumado está el ejecutivo que tiene que tomar decisiones de qué va a hacer y qué no va a hacer con AI. Y esto calma un poco cuando ven, bueno, ya
sí,
estamos.
Los grandes vendors y los grandes jefes, porque cuando digo es que muchos tienen presión del gerente máximo para y todos indican que sí, esa presión existe. Entonces viene por varios lados y es muy interesante. Hay mucho más por decir, pero vengan al evento y tenemos la discusión.
Y en esa línea tal vez, y ahora sí vamos a tornar a inglés para la audiencia. We are having in this podcast someone that has been exposed to big corporations, to big companies, to very, big organizations that care about data privacy and then need to develop AI solutions. And then this becomes an interesting challenge. So with that said, Mario, welcome to Data Latam.
Diego, thank you very much for having me here and friends. Diego, we've been with you are a dear friend from our days at MIT. I remember our time there very fondly, and all of the very nice and interesting projects we did over there. So thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure, Mario. It's awesome. Same thing on my end, but yeah, let's get into for the audience. Where are you now? Where are you exactly? Where are you based? And yeah, what are you doing for work, if you want?
So currently I am in the New York area. I am working for JP Morgan as an applied AI ML lead in the wealth management division. So what do I do? As I've always done, I try to solve use cases, business use cases, and put solutions together with technologies. And I always say that my job is a little bit as a translator of what is the business requirement and the business problem in finance or in banking, and translate that into what is technically possible with the technologies we have right now. And that means the tool could be AI, but the tooling could be to match could be something that's not AI as well. I am tool agnostic. I'm more interested in solutions than in a particular tool or technology.
That is lovely. That is lovely, and we'll get to talk more about that. But let me quickly give what I usually do, which is a summary of what can be found in LinkedIn. In this case, I'm going to try to leverage with what I know of you from those early days at MIT in Boston. But on the academic front, in LinkedIn, you say that you studied economics in the Instituto Tecnológico Santo Domingo, and then, of course, your MBA from MIT between 2001 and 2003. And then on the professional front, you've been in banking for a long time. Deutsche Bank after MIT, Itaú, BBA, HSBC, YieldX startup that I'm interested in, perhaps getting your grasp there. And then JP Morgan. So banking and technology and data, would you add anything? Can you add more color to what I just said?
Yeah, I would say fixed income is most of my history, of all my history in banking is in fixed income, including that startup, which what I did was I'm head of API and data for the portfolio optimization solutions using machine learning. And yeah, fixed income and banking, it's capital markets. Sales and trading is what I've done for most of my career.
And other than the shiny, happy, smart person that I know from those days, how did you get into data? Because I remember that you were kind of geeky, interested in all this stuff, and smart person. But how did you get into data? Why? What attracted you?
I think that comes even before you knew me. Even when I was at university in my bachelor's, data is something that I thought was just indispensable to answer any question, right? As opposed to intuition. I mean, I do have intuition. Some people have even more intuition, and it's a virtue. But for me, intuition without the confirmation of data, it's just, I don't function that way. I need to have the basis of the data in order to propose a solution, in order to make a suggestion. And that's, I started in data simply by, as everybody does, I guess everybody, researching the data sources, making surveys, right? Simple as that. I remember my first participation in a survey back in the Dominican Republic was gathering answers from 50, 100, 200 people with a team. And that's how you processing that data. That's you kind of, you get to love the process and love to understand how data works.
And I wonder, how did the tooling that you use for your data analysis evolve over time? I guess, of course, Excel has always been there and early on, but how, and more with the current days of AI, so how has that tooling that you use evolved over time?
Interesting that you mentioned Excel. When I started, Excel was not the thing. It was one of the things. But yeah, the tooling has changed. Luckily, I don't think the gist of the process has changed, right? Collecting data, feeling the data in your fingers, grasping what the data means. And sometimes it means different things from different people. And it means different things for different use cases, right? So that interpretation is, I think, has not changed. Yes, now you have the latest and greatest, for example, something I really like, one tool called TAP PFN. That's an AI model for tabular data. That's an interesting new concept. That has changed relative to Excel back in the days, right? Where you put everything in a spreadsheet and started doing your own forecasts and predictions. And everything in the middle, in between, right? So tooling will change, but how you process the data, how you understand the data, I don't think that will change regardless of the tooling.
And you mentioned something interesting about trying to understand well the use case, and then of course the data available and why what you can do with the data. But can you talk a little bit about, in general, I don't want specifics on one specific project, but when you are in this banking space where you work and you have to talk to business owners or people that have challenges that they want to solve, so how is that understanding, that interaction, to get to understand the use cases that are relevant, will have impact, and what's your process? How does that work in banking, right?
I think when I was in the front office, whenever I saw one trade idea or thought that a trade idea would be interesting or not, I always started by simple things, questions. What are the questions I'm trying to answer, right? Why is there a particular arbitrage opportunity in this in today's markets or circumstances? Is the data telling me or confirming that there is that opportunity right now, right? I have one side of a trade. Is it possible to find the other side, and how, right? And what are the pieces of data that I would need to try to find that other side of the trade, right? And I think that applies to any business case as well, right? You would start with questions. And what are the questions that people are trying to answer? What pieces or which questions would get you to answers that, and then a solution that would really add value, right? As opposed to you starting just pumping out data pieces out there and throwing it out to the business use case owner, because that's a waste of their time and a waste of your time, frankly, as well. Right?
Understood. Can you bring one specific project or something where you found a challenge, and then how you worked out to get to a solution?
So one case it's a bit experimental, but a case that I really liked was trying to build a knowledge graph out of, this was a few years back, out of very little amount of unstructured information, right? I had some unstructured information, but at that time, the technology was was very expensive if you were to use that on source of unstructured information, such as news or newspaper readings and so on and so forth, to try to build a knowledge graph that was relevant for the use case, right? So I thought, how do I make something that can get me started, right, with the ontology and taxonomy that I need for my knowledge graph, right? So guess what? Most companies, and all companies, they have structured tables, structured data that is interpreted by the subject matter experts inside the company. So you can actually use that to get started, the structured data, use that as a seed ontology and taxonomy later on, and then incorporate the unstructured data sources once you have some of the ontology in place, right? It's probably not the way it should be done, because it should be done cleanly and from scratch. But guess what? Many small companies and mediums and large-sized companies, they don't have the time, and because of the pressing issues, to build everything from scratch, right? It is a great exercise, and it should be done. And moreover, now it's cheaper to do it. So you should start from scratch with the business questions driving the ontology, relationship driving the ontology, then go down to your buckets or taxonomy, and then finally to your tables and whatnot. So I thought that use case was taught me a lot. It was very interesting. And, I was able to build a knowledge graph that answered many questions with that unstructured data, and I got that little kicker and help from the structured tables.
Because Mario, I think that this is also a clear use case where what we have now in LLMs are sort of aggregators of public information that you can now access much more easily, especially for this kind of initiative.
Correct. You correct. That's a great point, because one of the beauties of the LLM is to use them as a search engine, if you will, although they're not only that. But because they have so much unstructured information, they need some of your structure, right? They need some of your, what do you mean, right? And that would structure tables in your company can definitely give some guidance to the LLM when you want to try to use them as in that matter.
Lovely, understood. And yeah, so here what you're basically saying is get started with the structure that you already have, with the taxonomy and ontology that you already have, start feeding new data and adequate it to this structure and build this knowledge that you need for solving some of the use cases. Is that correct?
Correct. I mean, you can start adding more nodes to your knowledge graph later on, right? But it is a good exercise for the enterprises and the companies to start thinking about data not as tables only, but you can use the tables to migrate, if you will, to an ontology-based knowledge graph and structure, right? That will be the knowledge base of your company. We are getting out, I think we should be getting out of this structured world that we lived in for so long, which only gave us half the picture, because most of the data is not structured, it's unstructured.
You mentioned three words that can go close, but going together can be dangerous, right? And I want to explore that more in the banking space. You mentioned knowledge, data. You mentioned LLMs, and then banking and privacy, right? So what are your thoughts about any company, right? If you're in any company, let's not even think about banking for a while. You're thinking, yeah, I need to build this knowledge base, this knowledge graph. And I can start with these, but then how to manage data privacy and more in an environment like banking, right? So what are your thoughts around data privacy for building these type of tools and in more in general, right? When we were now referring to using LLMs every once and then for X or Y, right? So, yeah.
This is a very, I don't presume to have the answer to this problem. I just know that it's extremely important for all the companies to protect their customers' privacy, right? Because it will only increase in the awareness of the users, right? From now on, because of the information is so readily available out there. So the ability to guard your customers' data, the ability to not send your enterprise knowledge through prompts, through skills, to make API inferences and to the big labs, that's something that will probably be defined in the next couple of years. I do believe that the inference will come closer to the computers. I can see a model, an AI model inside a computer chip on your personal computer or your computer on the server of your company, so that you don't need to send all that knowledge out there, right? Once it's out there, you don't know what can happen, right? So it's better not to send it out. We are close. I've seen already some inferences inside personal computers. There are models small enough to do that and good enough to give you good results. But I think that trend will only accelerate. And I think that's what's going to protect both the knowledge base of each individual company, because acquiring that internal knowledge in companies is very costly, and also solve the data privacy issues to protect your customers' data.
Look, I cannot agree more. At the end of the day, companies are a good amount of knowledge on how to solve certain specific problems that someone wants to pay for. And Franz, I would like to get your point of view here as well, because I know that you are very into taking care of this type of data information for customers. So, yeah, what's your take?
There's a couple of levels to this, right? I don't know, Mario, if I'm going to be able to cover them all. But the first one that we saw in Expantia is that all those prompts that are outgoing, we need them internally as well. For us to learn how to better use these tools, we need to know how people are using these tools. So the first thing we've put in is like a proxy server where we proxy every request to an external LLM so that we know not only to manage cost, but also to manage what is going out, what is coming in, so that we can improve tools for the team. We use that because we need to start understanding which models we can use for which task. The larger models, I don't know if they will run on edge, right? If they will be able to run locally. Of course, that is not in the interest of OpenAI and the large model builders because they need the token count. But there are some very smaller models, you know, open models that are pretty good at certain tasks. Getting to the process where we can understand and validate, like with data, as you said before, which small models can be used for which tasks is a big part of what we are trying to understand now for ourselves, but also for our customers. Because getting ahead pretty soon will be a matter of not only what can you do, but at what cost can you do it?
Correct.
Right?
Correct. It's interesting you mentioned because I've seen some tools recently where you can actually set up a company with different types of workers assigned to different tasks. All these workers are agents. And guess what? Yeah, the agents can run. That's great. You put the agents to work on tasks, but you don't know if that task is valuable, or at least if the task is covering its token cost and giving the company some value, right? So that's why maybe you can have smaller models that can run for particular tasks that are cheaper because you can run them on the edge, right? And can run them locally.
Yep.
And then leave the inferences, inference for the larger models or, you know, more complex tasks, or if you need more data or more a larger model for a different task or orchestration or something like that, right? It is an art. It's going to become an art on how to set these things up.
Absolutely agree. And cost consciousness is part of that. Because maybe if I can send something locally where I have PII or information that is confidential, I get 80% of the quality of the answer, but that 20% might be worth it because now it's private.
Yes.
Making that distinction is not easy yet. We are working on it, you know, every single week to get those processes in order.
And it'll also be a responsibility of these owners and CEOs of the companies, the managers.
Yes.
They have to understand that this new paradigm, new way of looking at things has changed, and where the value is, the new value change with AI in the middle of the, as a piece of the value change, that needs to be understood for every single use case, every single company, every single operation model.
And Diego and I have been in meetings with CEOs of companies over the past few weeks. And that cost consciousness is a very important part. And what we also tell them, because I believe it's true, we have to keep into account that the token cost we're paying today is subsidized. It's subsidized with enormous event, you know, there's billions of dollars flowing into this. And it's actually a subsidy for what we are able to use. So thinking ahead means, well, if it's no longer subsidized, what does this mean for me?
I'm not sure. Let me push back a little bit on that. Subsidized, direct cost might be subsidized, but you are, when you send a skill or a prompt or a plan, you are providing value as well. So you're losing value.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's an exchange that I think many larger, you know, labs are willing to make. And you know, it's a network effect, if you will, or akin to the network effect back in 10, 15 years ago when the social networks were trying to grow and accelerate their user base. So I think we're subsidizing. It could be, I don't know. It could be, we could be subsidizing them, meaning.
That's a very good point.
The consumers, the users could be subsidizing them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're providing a lot of value out of using it, out of giving a lot of data and giving a lot of knowledge on how to solve it.
Even if it's simple cooking recipes, right? The aggregate of many people asking about a cooking recipe and how they, what are they asking for? What do they want? I mean, that's a lot of value, information that many people would want.
Yeah. And one thing is at individual level when it's at companies level, right? I mean, companies are built to to create some knowledge and value. And if you're giving that back to these companies, yeah, it's a lot of value. I agree. But
imagine users, I'll chime in, I'll finish with this point. Imagine users asking the same prompt. How does company XYZ works, right? Because I'm interested in this public company. Imagine if you have a million prompts in a period of eight or 9 minutes asking the same thing. That's a lot of value.
Yeah, interesting. So I want to go to something that you just mentioned, which is more related to workflows. But before that, this idea of companies that are now being pushed to use AI, right? Because everybody's, oh, you're not using AI. And then, by the way, some of the answers that we get from some of these CIOs, chief data officers or CEOs, where they say, look, I would like to use this model, but this company doesn't allow me and we are married with this. And I'm going to just say name, Microsoft. But hey, I cannot use Anthropic through Microsoft. There's some good level of confusion, right, on how people can accommodate the different Gen AI in this particular case, even though there's more AIs than Gen AI, and how to use them internally to be cost efficient, that sometimes we see that, yeah, this is a confusion that is not allowing end users to really get the most out of these tools. But other than that, which we can cover in another conversation, you mentioned, Mario, now when we were talking about companies, workflows, right? So different tasks and different things that can be done. I know that you have a point on what's going on with agents and workflows. Can you, introduce that topic, please?
I think over the last 6 months, we've shifted. The AI market shifted, I would say, if I can use the word market, from tasks that required one or two hops, probably not more than that. Text to SQL, give me the database, the data on XYZ, go search my database, that type of thing. Answer a simple prompt, here it is, right? Or maybe two steps until you get to the answer that the user needs. Now, with the advent of the advance in the models recently, you can actually complete very, very long run tasks. And tasks that involve a lot of processing of information. And that's what AI models are good at. We cannot, as humans, process as much information as they can in a certain period of time. And analyzing companies, analyzing stocks, and coming up with a stock analysis, right? That is possible. Legal, all these verticals, AI companies, have proven that it is possible to spend 15, 20 minutes on a task and come up with a pretty good answer at the other end. So these workflows, I think it's the most valuable feature of these models recently. And I've been very surprised as a subject matter expert at how far they can go into a specific task and how well they can deliver, right? Specifically in finance. So
there's a phenomenon there, Mario, where subject matter experts like you can really be empowered by this. But it appears to be that in large part, because if there's anything that is coming out where you say like, nah, that's not where we're going, and you give it back, right? You do it again or move in this direction because you're subject matter experts. But juniors might take any answer at face value. And that is an increasing risk because you don't have guarantees that what comes out is actual, factual, is the right analysis.
That's a good point. First of all, there is no guarantee anywhere because there is no guarantee that humans will perform the task 100% of the time, all the time, perfectly, right? So let's take it with a grain of salt. And I think it's true. You need the human in the loop. And we just need to get used to working with this new technology, and the juniors will have to face the situation where they assume that a result is good, and it turns out that it's not because they didn't do the job, right? To review the results. The human didn't do the job to review the result. So I think models will get better as well. So it's a very interesting mix right now in this transition period. But I think I'm an optimist. I think humans will find a way to use this new tool and augment the value add and the results that they provide right now. Right? The fact that AI is helping us deliver faster doesn't mean that we're going to sit around and do nothing, because no, that is not the way it works, right? Usually the human race starts thinking of new ways to deliver and to do things. So
we like saying that the real AI is augmented intelligence, not artificial intelligence. And of course, there's this mix, but still human in the loop and what you guys now discussed, this will not be infallible. You need to be able to have the right AI solutions, which, by the way, may mix LLMs and may mix predictive analytics, machine learning and rules-based AI, whatever, right? But these solutions need to have the right validations and guardrails, and at the end, the human in the loop to be able to ensure that decisions in companies still make sense. But I agree that the ratio between humans and AI will be evolving. And with that, Mario, I would like to take you to the future, right? So in general, you are doing a lot of hard work bringing technology into banking and solving use cases. And you're seeing how, I mean, you're testing these tools and trying to play with them. How do you see the future in general, but specifically in banking, right? So if you imagine the banks today, and you think about them in 2, 3, 5 years from now, are there things that come to your mind, you know, predictions, if you want?
Every prediction that anyone can make about AI right now will for sure be wrong in the next 6 months, because it's so rapidly evolving. But I think we spoke about the inference. I think that's a big space and big arena of the industry right now. Like, where is this? Where should we place the inference? I think it will be closer to the edge and to the local. I think that makes sense. That would make sense for many users, in the sense that, you know, for privacy reasons and for cost reasons as well. So I think that's something that I think will happen. I think a lot of more value-added tasks will be tackled by AI. This notion of vertical AI will continue. There is no need to have one general purpose for everything model like the labs have it right now. So I think that's another trend, if you will. The emphasis on workflows and how to create those workflows in an easier way to customize them. That's another trend that I think will keep moving forward, right? Those are the three things that I see now. But again, in the next 6 months, things evolve so fast that you probably have a different idea, right?
Yeah, no, but lovely. Thanks for those three very specific, interesting points, and I would agree completely. They make so much sense. And perhaps the last question, Mario, is how are you what are your ways of keeping up with all that is going on related to AI and, of course, your industry? So what are the ways in which you get to do what you have to do, but at the same time, keep on learning? Is it by pure work? Do you go to conferences? Do you listen to certain people, read certain stuff? What is it that you do?
Yeah. Is it wrong if I say that I watch YouTube videos about AI with a glass of wine? Is that bad?
Sounds lovely. Sounds great.
I love it. Can we join?
So I think that's one of the ways I, you know, some afternoon, weekend, Let me just turn on YouTube. Let's see what's new on this topic or that topic. Pour a glass of wine and see what new demos I see there. So I find that very interesting, and that leads me to research more on, you know, either LinkedIn or Hacker News, or go to the companies. Every company has a web page now with a bunch of blog posts and whatnot. So that's a way. AI related web page with their blog posts and the most recent deliveries and their more recent releases. I think that's a good way to learn because it makes it very concrete for me. Right? Yeah, that's mostly the way inputs I have.
No, fantastic. And by the way, I would say that a good amount of customers that we've worked on with over the past 10 years are in the banking space. I think that doing what you're doing in the banking space that has been an early adopter of AI and will continue doing a lot with AI in general is fantastic way of learning. Just by doing what you're doing, learning about use cases, solving them, checking out all the technologies. Usually banks have a lot of money to spend. Now, they may be more cost conscious now with you there on board. But yeah, I think that at the end of the day, you have the possibility of playing with different tools and different things. So I think that's...
I've been lucky to be in this at this time at JP Morgan, which has made a tremendous effort to change culture, make an adoption push. That was unprecedented. It is truly a visionary bank in AI, right? They were early adopters and they pushed the entire personnel to use it, right? And spend the money that needed to be spent to make that cultural change happen. So I'm very fortunate.
Fantastic. And with that, I think it's a perfect segue for the next podcast that we may record in the future. But for now, Mario, thanks so much for sharing these experiences, what you've been doing, and yeah, fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, Franz. Thank you, Diego. Thank you for the invitation.
Bye. Take care.
Gracias por acompañarnos en nuestra exploración del mundo de ciencia de datos en este Data Latam podcast.
Cada dos semanas encontrarás un nuevo episodio en datalatam.com o iTunes. Si te gustó este podcast, déjanos comentarios en Facebook.